The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me is Spencer Hager, one of our resident certified financial planners, and our special guest, Mike Gatteri from Health Markets Insurance Agency. Glad to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
It's always good to see you. I learn a lot when you're here.
It's always fun.
We're going to take on the topic of the future of healthcare, how we're going to shift landscapes, and specifically the role of Medicare and some of the Part D updates. You came a long way to see us today. We appreciate it.
Always willing to do it. It's a good time.
Before we get into the conversation, I want you to tell people about Health Markets and what you do for them.
Yeah, so I've been with Health Markets for 23 years now. And as an organization, what we do is we help people search for, find, and keep the best health, life, disability insurance for themselves, for their business, for their family. We work with over 250 different insurance companies, so we are not partial to any one organization. We're not going to sell you on any one company. We want to do the analysis and find what's best for you. And of course, 23 years ago when I started in this industry, I didn't think health insurance would be a political topic. But now with every election and every new administration, the rules change every year, so we get to shop it all over again.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to get too far into that conversation, but it sure does feel like it's a light switch lately.
For sure.
And I have personally have family members who are dealing with the increase in prescription prices astronomically. So I'm going to be excited to get into the conversation. So talking about rising healthcare costs, you know, I think people can feel overwhelmed by, and I actually have been in that position. I suppose we are all petri dishes of that when healthcare costs start to pile up and you're trying to pay your bills and make sure that you're paying your physicians and your prescriptions and get the prescriptions that you need and finding the right prices. There are so many platforms and opportunities to get discounts that it's almost, it almost makes your brain shut down. You just don't know which way to turn. So what's your approach to kind of helping clients manage the rising healthcare costs, especially with high deductible plans and HSAs?
Yeah, so the harsh reality is that medical inflation is almost double regular inflation. And so, you know, when we're seeing 6%, 7%, 8% inflation in the economy, it's double that in the healthcare space.
And why does that happen?
Just because the doctors and hospitals have really no checks and balances as far as what they can charge. And so they take liberties and they do that. Absolutely. And so our approach to it and how we really try to defray that cost is first and foremost focusing on the big things. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to have every doctor office visit and every script covered 100% for all of our customers. But doctor office visits and scripts, for the most part, don't cause financial ruin. It's the hospitalizations, it's the surgeries, it's the big ticket items that will really bury someone in the majority of situations. So our first approach is always make sure the big stuff is covered. And not only make sure that the big stuff is covered from the doctor or from the deductibles and copays, but also think of the after effects. Mm-hmm. Because for most people, their biggest asset is their ability to earn an income. Mm-hmm. And having a heart attack is certainly going to cause some medical expenses, but the 3 months, the 6 months, the 12 months of lost wages is far more expensive than the actual direct costs. So we always think of the big ticket items from the holistic approach of what is the direct and indirect costs. But from there, that's when we drill down into the doctor office visits, the scripts, things like that. And what's interesting is for probably 9 out of 10 of our customers, it costs more to insure themselves for the doctor office visits and scripts than it would be to just pay for them out of pocket. So oftentimes our recommendation is to get what you said, an HSA. pay yourself that money.
And an HSA, let's tell people what that is.
Yeah, great question.
We like to talk in acronyms.
I completely agree. So HSA stands for Health Savings Account, and it's just that. It's a savings account that you open at a local bank or a local credit union, and you are then allowed to put money into that account so that when that doctor office visit comes up or when that prescription cost comes up, you've got the money set aside to pay for it, and you're not relying on the insurance company to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, over a 3-year, 5-year, 10-year period, the vast majority of people wind up so much further ahead if they pay for their own doctor office visits and scripts, put that money away, and then when those costs come up, the money's there.
Even employer insurance?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, some employers will give people money towards their own HSA, but putting money into your HSA is a tax deduction. Mm-hmm. And if you manage it the right way, you can actually get it to be tax-free when you turn age 65. So it's tax-free going in, it's potentially tax-free coming out, and it's there to pay for your expenses if and when you need them.
If I can juke for a moment to the financial planning side so I can get Spencer into the game, I thought HSAs were a retirement tool in some ways, and based on what Mike is saying, that would be the case. And we've done shows on retirement tools where we talk about health savings accounts specifically, but I'd like to kind of refresh people's memory.
Well, yes. So
you can open this at a bank?
Well, I was going to say, to make sure I'm on the same page, are we talking about pre-Medicare for someone who's not covered through their employer on health insurance? Is that what you're talking about right now?
I would defer to Mike.
So like and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Mike, I thought with like Affordable Care Act policies, oftentimes you couldn't take out a health savings account. Is that completely off base?
So anyone under age 65 can take out a health savings account as long as they have what is called a high deductible health plan.
Right.
Or another acronym, HDHP. So basically what that means is as long as it's HSA eligible, you can open the health savings account. And so while there's not a ton of marketplace HSA plans out there, there certainly are some.
Okay. Yeah, but to your point, Tracy, yeah, so I think that's kind of what Mike was getting at. So you can almost turn it into like a retirement tool for health expenses specifically. So usually how it goes, you put money into the health savings account. To Mike's point, you get a tax deduction. Most of those, it depends. If you can go out and get your own, if you're doing it through your employer, usually they have a HSA, custodian they're using for it. They'll give you a list of investment options. You have to keep a cash minimum in the account. You can invest the money within the HSA, and then if you don't touch it, it comes out tax-free, all that growth that you had in there. And so if you do it correctly, you can have a huge HSA balance that, you know, when inevitably health expenses start to grow more and more, you can pull from this account and fund it. So it almost can become like a Roth IRA for health expenses.
So it carries over year by year. You don't lose any of what you put into it, and it continues to grow?
Correct. So there's two different kind of savings accounts out there that trip people up. There's the health savings account, which does roll over. It's your money. There's the flex spending account, or the FSA, which does not roll over, and that's where the employer funds it. You use it or you lose it situation.
Got it.
One other thing I'd say on Spencer's point, because I do have an HSA eligible plan for myself. Mm-hmm. I fully fund my HSA every single year, but when I have a medical expense, I don't take the money out of my HSA. Why would I take money out of an account that's growing tax-free and will be tax-free when I turn 65? I would much rather spend money that's not going to be tax-free. So I fund my HSA, and then when I have expenses, I spend it from somewhere else.
But if you don't have that disposable income, you would have to tap into the HSA.
Correct.
Clearly, right? We talk a lot about different buckets in our business. I'll let you go there.
I was just gonna, I think we touched on that on a previous show. Mm-hmm. Like, make sure you're not – if you're only putting $2,000 into a 401k, maybe don't put $7,000 into the HSA and their annual limits. So there's a time and a place for it, but if you can do it and cash flow is good, it's a great tool. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I kind of want to – my brain is while you're talking, I need to understand something. How do you get paid? I mean, as a consumer, when I hear about services like this, I'm always apprehensive, and I think I could probably speak for a lot of our followers when I think, you know, is it going to come out of my – pocket to pay you? Explain to people how you're paid.
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's a great question because people don't want to pay for something when they can do it for free on their own. I mean, I do have a tip jar on my desk and I ask people to put money in there. Inevitably, it never happens. But we actually get paid from the various insurance companies. So there is no fee to our customers. And that's not even, there's no indirect fee, meaning you're not going to pay more for your insurance or any kind of hidden fees. If you enroll with a plan through us, it's going to be the exact same rate that you pay through the various carriers or directly through the marketplace. So I like to say you're getting our knowledge and expertise truly for
free.
That's
fantastic.
Yeah, and to that point, is that a question I think a lot of people probably wonder is like healthcare.gov, you see that all the time, talking about pre-Medicare coverage. Similar deal, like why work with someone like you versus just going on to healthcare.gov and getting pestered by a bunch of phone calls.
Yep.
Same answer.
Same plans, yep. Same rates. You know, the we're going to know in a matter of 5 minutes what plan is best for you. And I can't tell you how oftentimes I hear from a customer, oh, I did it on my own and I didn't know my doctor wasn't covered. Yep. I did it on my own. I didn't know my script wasn't covered. And then we're trying to undo what happened. And we could have done it in the initial stages and made it quicker and easier and free.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can work with an expert and it's the same cost, you know, why wouldn't you? Exactly. Right.
So. 100% agree.
Do people typically layer, so I'm thinking about somebody who's got employer paid insurance, health insurance. Would it make sense for somebody to come to you to add another layer to that so that they're, or is that out of pocket? Counterintuitive to what you do?
So it's always worth the investigation. If we're talking about potentially getting your health insurance cheaper, no. An employee is 99% of the time going to be able to get their employer plan cheaper than they can an open market plan. When it comes to spouse and kids, though, most employers don't contribute for the spouse and children on that plan. So we can, in many situations, get the dependents a plan cheaper than what the employer plan will cost. But to answer your question directly about layering, again, I'm a big believer in protecting your biggest asset, which is your ability to earn an income. And so having a disability plan, having an accident plan, having something that will, like an Aflac style plan that will help pay for your deductibles and copays, absolutely we can do those. And I am a very, very big believer in making sure that it makes sense financially. As an example, what I mean is there's one accident plan that I love. It costs $28 a month, but pays a $15,000 benefit if someone has an injury. So when you break down those numbers, if someone has an injury in the next 45 years, they'll get more out of the plan than they put into it. Mm-hmm. So whether you quote unquote need that 15 grand or not, if I can get a $15,000 payout and I'm not paying $15,000 in, mm-hmm. it's a smart financial decision, in my mm-hmm. opinion.
Mm-hmm. And I know we want to keep this on health insurance, but you had me wondering there. Accident insurance compared to like a traditional short-term or long-term disability plan. In your experience, do you see the stipulations for what would justify a payout from the insurance company? Any big differences between them, between accident and disability?
So with an accident plan like I was referencing, it's very black and white. If you wind up in the hospital due to an injury, you're getting your $15,000 payout.
But you have to be in a hospital.
For the 15, yes. If you wind up at the ER, it's a smaller payout. If you wind up at the urgent care, there's still a payout. So there's a payout for everything. Okay. It's 15 grand for hospitalization. As to where with a disability plan, you have to read the fine print, because with disability plans, they can read to where if you're unable to perform any job, it will pay out. There's others that just say if you're unable to perform your job, it will pay out.
And will the accident policy continue to pay you post leaving the hospital, or is that primarily only when you're, or the ER, whatever it is? Is it just paying out for the cost of that one event, and then once you're, you know, back out of there and okay, the payment stops?
No, it'll continue after the fact.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
A big part of why we're excited that you're here is to talk about the Medicare updates. And I want to give that topic its due in this conversation. So I'm going to turn that over to you to kind of tell people what's on deck, what they can expect.
Yeah, so we spend almost all of August and September learning about the changes every single year. That's how significant the industry changes every single year. And this year is no different. This year, the big change we're going to see are really governmental related. So parts of the Inflation Reduction Act are still coming to fruition now. And this year, one of such changes are going to be the change on prescription drug plans. So all Part D plans for Medicare, what they have to do for this year and every year going forward is they have to have no more than $2,000 a year of out-of-pocket costs. So if you're on Xarelto or Ibrance or any of these expensive name brand medications that are sometimes thousands of dollars a month, no one on Medicare will pay more than $2,000 a year for their meds.
You said, what was that? That was because of the Inflation Reduction Act?
Yeah, the Inflation Reduction Act did away with what was called the donut hole.
Yeah.
And so, for 2025, the donut hole is gone, and all out-of-pocket costs for prescriptions are capped at $2,000 a year.
Mm.
So it's a great thing, but like anything, for every positive, there has to be a negative. And so the government is making the insurance companies pick up more of the bill. And so how is that going to be translated? The insurance companies are going to pass that along in regards to higher premiums. And so for people who have a standalone drug plan, we are seeing rate increases on standalone drug plans of 200% and 300%. For those who have Medicare Advantage plans who already have a $0 premium, they won't see a rate increase, but what they will see is pullback of other benefits. So with a Medicare Advantage plan, you not only get your medical and your prescriptions on one plan, but it also includes dental, vision, hearing aids, all these sorts of things. And so what the insurance companies are forced to do is basically, since they're having to pay more on scripts, they're going to have to pull back on the dental coverage, pull back on the vision coverage, pull back on what your co-pays and things like that were, and you're going to see a much bigger cost share in regards to Medicare Advantage plans.
Has there been a big shakeup with the Part Ds, with some, like, I'm thinking of the GLP-1s, everyone's talking about those. Have you seen a big shakeup as far as like what people are going to be looking for with some of these new drugs coming online?
Yeah, so that's the other thing that's happening is with this $2,000 max out of pocket, of course, it's $2,000 of accepted drugs, right? Or drugs that are on the insurance company's formulary.
Yeah.
So there are certainly some insurance companies that are narrowing their list of drugs.
Yep.
There's one plan in specific that basically is not going to cover any name brand drugs at all this year. And so most of the plans out there are going to have one or two of those GLP-1s covered, but they're certainly not widely covered. And anyone who's on those meds, you need to shop it around because there may only be a handful of options that will cover your specific medication.
Yeah, I figured.
So you just hit the next topic I was thinking about. So you're at ground zero. You have to start. Where do you start?
So we did outreach to every one of our current customers, about 900 customers, and said, we need your list of meds for the new year. We've got to know what you're on right now. And we have gone through, we're only on day three here of the Medicare period, but we have gone through and we've done that research for all of our customers to say, all right, even with the rate increase, you should keep the plan you have. Or because of formulary changes or rate increases, here's a plan that's going to be better for you. So for anyone out there who isn't working with a local agent, you got to shop it this year. The government anticipates that about 85 to 90% of people will wind up switching their drug plan this year because a different plan will be better.
Wow.
Two kind of basic questions. One, just when is the open enrollment for Medicare?
Yep. So the shopping window started October 1st,
yep.
But technically the enrollment window is from October 15th through December 7th.
Okay. Second question, in your experience, like for someone who's maybe not just doing the annual checkup on it, someone who's moving and looking to get on to Medicare, how far in advance of that do you usually recommend they reach out and start that process?
So we do a Medicare 101 for all of our current customers 1 year before they go on to Medicare, so 64. So on their 64th birthday, we send them a birthday card. It includes a lottery ticket. Hope they have some good luck. And it's also their welcome invite to our Medicare 101. And we spend a one-hour class with anyone who is getting near the Medicare age to learn, what does Medicare cost? When do you enroll? How do you enroll? What are the deductibles? I mean, it's a completely different market than anything else out there. So it requires some education. And we do those classes once a month, every month. We do them face-to-face. We do them over Zoom. But we want to make sure people are educated, and we need to get people into those classes about a year ahead of time.
Okay. That's helpful.
Why did I think the age moved to 67?
You're probably thinking of Social Security full retirement ages for most people, 67, but Medicare, 65.
Gotcha. So, wow. So I have something to look forward to. I need to keep you on speed dial. Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely.
All right. Telemedicine and virtual care. So, you know, what is I have my perceived ideas of what the impact of this is, and I think we've all dealt with it. But what, from your perspective, is the impact of all of this on client care, and how do you explain its coverage options to people?
Yeah, so since we're in a situation where we're talking so much about medical inflation, this is one way that we can defray that cost. You know, I'll take myself as an example. I am beyond allergic to poison ivy. You know, every spring I just go outside and I'm gonna get poison ivy.
Me too. Do you swell up like the marshmallow puff guy?
yes,
I
do.
I'm talking like gauze and
If I look at someone with poison ivy, I'm gonna get it. But I know what I get every single spring. Mm-hmm. So rather than having to wait 2 weeks to get into my doctor or pay to go to the urgent care, I can just call up my telemedicine provider and say, I know I've got poison ivy. send me the script.
And they say, okay.
Yeah, they can send you the script right over the phone. Now, don't get me wrong. They're not going to diagnose you with depression. They're not going to prescribe narcotics. But for your basic things, your colds, your flus, your
acute
pink
illness.
Eyes. Yeah, you acute. Can call in.
Not pneumonia.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But you can FaceTime or Zoom with someone, and they can see, you know, they might ask to see your rash or things like that. And they can prescribe medicines for the basic things instantly. And with the vast majority of insurance companies, it's free. It's saving the insurance company significant money, so they're not charging you anything for those services in many situations.
Mike's like the equivalent of Inspector Gadget. He opens his coat and he's got policy here in this pocket, a policy in this pocket, 45 different things to show people.
Absolutely.
That's exciting. I had no idea there were so many different we've always kind of lived and died by the employee benefits, the employee health insurance mindset. I come from that generation. You know, you gauge you gauge a job interview on what kind of health insurance is offered to you.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, let's talk about that. I'm going to derail. So let's talk about COBRA. All right, so you're someone pre-Medicare, okay? You're going through a job transition. Your health insurance was covered through your employer. And now you have the decision, okay, do you take COBRA, which not everyone gets, but it's essentially continuation of your health insurance benefits and maybe some other things. You know, what's the dynamic for your single individual having that conversation versus,
question.
You know, have a spouse and kids and, you know, just kind of talking, you know, what are you looking at as far as COBRA versus get rid of it? Because with COBRA, right, you're no longer just footing your part of the bill. You're footing the whole bill for the coverage.
Correct.
And it gets usually pretty expensive.
Yeah. So there's three or four factors there that we look at. And again, everyone should chop it just so that they know, right?
Yeah.
Don't just assume that COBRA's better. Don't just assume that COBRA's worse. Just take the half an hour and educate yourself. But COBRA is exactly that. It is the continuation of your employer plan at the total cost plus a 2% service fee.
Mm.
You can have it for typically 18 months. And so what you'll find is that in 8 out of 10 situations or so, COBRA is going to be more expensive than an open market plan. So does that mean you shouldn't take COBRA? Well, no, because if you've already met your deductible on your work plan,
If
you've already met your maximum out of pocket on your work plan, saving a couple bucks to reset your deductible and reset your max out of pocket probably doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. But if you haven't hit your deductible, if you haven't hit your max, if your COBRA is more expensive than an open market plan, those are the situations where not taking COBRA will make all the sense in the world. The other thing that I love to tell people is that you have 45 days to choose COBRA or not.
Yeah.
So you may have someone who's leaving their employer and starting a new job where coverage kicks in 30 days from now. Don't pay for COBRA. If you get hit by a bus, you're going to go back and pay for that coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can go those 30 days and not have anything major happen, you've got the ability to pay COBRA at any time during that 45-day period. So don't give them that money up front if you're only going to have a 30-day gap. You can roll the dice, sit with that bill on your coffee table, and just tell your wife, hey, if I get hit by a bus, pay COBRA. If nothing happens, we got a free month of health insurance.
Do you talk to people a lot about health and wellness when you're having these conversations? Is that part of your client conversation to talk about how to take care of themselves so they don't have to engage in some of these changes in their policies?
Yeah, I mean, especially with our Medicare recipients, you know, I see some customers who they retire and they sit on the couch and they mm-hmm. don't do anything. And within a couple of years, their health significantly deteriorates. We've got other customers who stay active and they utilize the gym or some of these fitness benefits that they get. And they never age. And so, you know, going for your yearly checkup, going for your yearly physical, trying to catch any of these potential medical conditions before it becomes a surgery or hospitalization is so huge. And certainly with Medicare, with the marketplace, with the majority of plans these days, you can get those kinds of services for free. So if you're not going to pay a penny for it, you might as well nip it in the bud while it's, you know, still a small condition.
Yeah. And I mean, what people don't realize is your insurance rates are higher the more predisposed conditions, you know, pre-existing. Thank you. And if you're burying your head, sitting on the couch, burying your head, not doing your level best to be the healthiest person, you're just going to add medical costs later. And you can't get people to understand that. They'd rather just.
Yeah, that growth aggressive. Coming out of the side of your neck isn't going to get smaller if you just hope it to go away.
Yeah,
go in and get it checked out.
It sounds to me like, what is your Do you have a lot, sort of long-term relationship with your clients like we do?
Yeah. So, I mean, we meet with our customers multiple times a year. We want to make sure they're in the best plan every year. So, yeah, it is not transactional. It is definitely, you know, a long-term relationship. And so we want to find something that's going to continue to work for you. And, mm-hmm. of course, we care about people. We want to put them in the best plans.
That's awesome. We have the same kind of landscape here. We're very proud of that. That's got to be gratifying for you on the health level when you're watching people have success and, you know, come out of financial ruin on the medical side of things because of some advice you've given them.
Right. And that's just that in 23 years, I've never had a customer say, Mike, I filed bankruptcy because I didn't have the right plan, or Mike, I've got to, you know, sell an asset in order to pay my medical bills. It's a great feeling to know that we're protecting people the right way.
Sure. Now, Mike, how long term is a relationship when you tell them that they need to go to the gym? No, I'm joking. I'm going
to move on to the next thing. Yeah. How long does that relationship last?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, I would like to actually hear one of those conversations because I've had a few.
Trust me, there's definitely some tough love that comes mm-hmm. with our business, right? Oftentimes people, they want to hear what they want to hear, and that's not our job. Our job is to protect them, even if that means telling them some tough situations.
Yeah. Do you guys get into the, with AI, the development of AI, do you guys have a problem or some sort of process in place to help people protect themselves on the insurance side, or do you get involved in that at all?
Yeah, on the insurance side, that's not really something that we deal with a ton. I mean, certainly the medical industry mm-hmm. is transitioning a lot to that. I mean, it's amazing to see the headways that are happening with technology in regards to procedures and surgeries, but on our end, it really hasn't had much of an impact quite yet.
I was going to ask, what about short-term health insurance plans compared to traditional ACA? Where do you land on that? What do you caution people on that?
Yeah, so short-term plans were a great option for people who were healthy and didn't get government subsidies. So okay. if you didn't have pre-existing conditions and you weren't qualifying for government subsidies, a short-term plan was a great viable option in most states. The current administration just signed a bill that went into effect on September 1, saying that short-term plans can be no longer than 3 months in duration. And the reason for that is they want to get as many people as they can onto the marketplace, because if the healthy people weren't on the marketplace, the only people on the marketplace were the unhealthy people who use their insurance and drive rates up. So in theory, if we get the healthy people onto the marketplace, that should bring rates down. It'll be a 3 or 4 year process for that to actually take effect.
And that's nationwide, you're saying?
Yeah.
Because it used to be with short-term health plans, or at one in Ohio, I'm talking, I know it's state by state, but like in Ohio, it used to be 6 months, and then didn't they bump it to 12 for a little bit? And so like, in theory, if you didn't have pre-existing conditions, you could go on these plans, they were cheaper. And then if something like a pre-existing condition for the next year came up, you could then switch to the ACA and they would cover it.
Exactly.
But now it's 3 months.
Yeah. So it's actually been administration by administration. So under the Obama administration, it was 6 months. The Trump administration took it 12. To 12 months. Now the Biden administration's taking it back to 3 months. So let's watch the election. And if we have someone that wants Obamacare to succeed, chances are the short-term plans are going to stay with that same regulation. But if it's president, or if Trump gets back in the office, then there's a very good likelihood that those will go back to 12 months.
All right. We'll cross that bridge when you get to it. Right. Stay where it's safe.
How do people find you, Mike?
So best way is to go to our website, healthmarketscolumbus.com. They can call the office, 614-568-1324. Or if they want continual education, we have a website that we've built out there talking about all the things insurance. So what's a copay? What's a deductible? What's Part A for Medicare? What's Part B for Medicare? And so that website is just myinsuranceclassroom.com.
That's great for people who are just fresh out of the trenches learning about these things. Well, thank you very much for being with us today. We've once again learned a lot, and it's always nice to sit down with you and have a conversation.
Ton of fun. I'll be back whenever you guys need me.
Thank you. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.